Coming up on KUCB News, what happens to Unalaska's eagles after they die, and why are commercial fishermen receiving letters about opioid abuse? Stay tuned.
Local News is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Tuesday, August 29th, 2017. When bald eagles die in Unalaska, it's the beginning of a long journey, literally. As KUCB's Barrett Wilbur reports, many of them travel thousands of miles and find second lives in the lower 48.
When Damian Lopez Plancarte walks into the wildlife trooper office and opens his freezer, it looks like Thanksgiving. The shelves are jammed full of turkey-shaped items wrapped in plastic, but none of them are turkeys.
And we have 5 dead eagles.
Lopez Plancarte is the eagle guy in Unalaska. When a raptor is found dead, which happens a lot, he gets the call to remove the bird. He bags the carcass and stores it here, along with...
That's the ice cream sandwich. Keep them in the same freezer.
These eagles may have an unusual icy grave, but soon they'll begin a journey that could take them more than 3,000 miles across America. Why? The Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act of 1940 made it a federal crime for anyone to possess eagle parts, and the punishment is severe. Get caught with even one feather, and you could receive a $200,000 fine, a year-long prison sentence, or both. The exception is for members of federally recognized tribes, many of whom use eagle feathers, talons, and other parts in ceremonies or as spiritual objects. But taking, buying, or transporting eagle parts is still illegal. So, how are indigenous people supposed to get them? The answer is stored in the freezer at the National Eagle Repository in Colorado. Dead eagles from across the nation are shipped there, including those from Unalaska. Sarah Metzer works at the repository. Her job includes delivering educational programs and sorting through 2 giant walk-in freezers full of eagle carcasses.
Wanting to ensure that we protect that constitutionally protected right of religious freedom, our facility operates to turn those eagles around, and we're able to distribute those parts and feathers to members of federally recognized Native American tribes.
Last year, she says the repository received 2,700 eagles to fill nearly 4,000 orders. That's more than 7 eagles a day, and the rate keeps climbing.
We're looking at getting a third freezer.
Most orders are from the Southwest, Metzer says, where the feathers are used for powwows and graduations, as well as gifts and headdresses.
It's a pretty special thing, just knowing that there's a recipient on the other end, and this eagle will live on, and their spirit will live on through that applicant.
But the wait can be long and frustrating for those who feel like the federal government shouldn't be in charge of distributing ceremonial objects or regulating indigenous spirituality. If you place an order today, it would take 6 months to get a whole bald eagle, and half that for 20 loose feathers. A golden eagle can take more than 2 years. That makes it tempting to pick feathers up off the beach. And now, indigenous people can do just that. After decades of an informal policy to look the other way when Native Americans had non-repository feathers, the Justice Department issued a memo in 2012. It lets indigenous people pick up and possess culturally significant eagle parts, even if they didn't come from the repository, as long as they don't sell the parts or kill the eagles. So while the repository does fill orders from Alaska, chances are slim that Unalaska's eagles will find themselves back on the island in the afterlife. In Unalaska, I'm Barrett Wilbur.
Hurricane Harvey, now a tropical storm, has caused nearly 100 oil production platforms in the Gulf of Mexico to shut down temporarily. Since the storm came ashore last Friday, officials say oil production in that region has dropped by more than 300,000 barrels a day. But that doesn't necessarily mean there's a higher demand for Alaska's oil. Dan Stickle is chief economist at the State Department of Revenue, and he says the global oil market is oversupplied.
There's a lot of ability for the market to absorb a temporary shut-in of some production here or there.
Alaska's oil doesn't really compete with Gulf Coast oil either. Stickle says they're essentially two different markets. So as long as production isn't stalled long-term from the hurricane, it's not likely that oil prices are going to jump significantly. Alaskans probably won't see an increase in the price of gasoline either, because the state gets most of its gas from West Coast refineries. But if the Gulf Coast stays offline for an extended period of time, Stickle says Alaskans could eventually see prices change at the pump. When Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans in 2005, they spiked all over Alaska.
We're not really expecting that type of impact from this particular hurricane.
Katrina killed more than 1,000 people and left crucial pipelines and refineries in the Gulf Coast unable to operate for weeks. In Texas, officials currently estimate that Harvey's death toll has reached at least 12 people. This month, researchers in the Bering Sea heard and then spotted a pair of North Pacific right whales. The rare sighting of these endangered marine mammals was made possible by a network of buoys that caught the sounds of their calls. KDLG's Liam Wright has the story.
That's the call of the North Pacific right whale, a critically endangered species that was sighted on August 10th by a research vessel of biologists studying whale populations in the Bering Sea. The team tracked down the two whales after picking up their calls from miles away. The researchers then recorded their calls and took pictures, even collecting a biopsy sample from one. The North Pacific right whale is one of the rarest whale species in the Pacific, according to Maggie Mooney Seuss, communications manager for the Alaska Fisheries Science Center.
Some of the scientists at our center estimated that the North Pacific right whale population was once around 15 to 20,000 animals. So now it's estimated to be around 30 to 50 animals in the eastern North Pacific.
The researchers hope to be able to use the data collected to learn more about the species.
We're hoping to learn how healthy they are. We're also hoping to learn a little bit about their genetics, their migrations, the habitats they're using. We really don't know anything about this species, where it spends most of the year, where it's mating, where it's raising its young. And so this gives us a lot of good information. We're excited because we haven't had many of these opportunities over the last decade or so.
Mooney Seuss says the last time Pacific right whales were photographed was around 2009. The species has struggled to recover for more than a century after being greatly overhunted beginning in the mid-19th century. I'm Liam Wright.
This year, Governor Bill Walker issued a disaster declaration to combat opioid abuse in Alaska, and since then, more time and resources have been dedicated to the issue. As KHNS's Abby Collins reports, some of those efforts are aimed at getting the attention of the fishing community.
We haven't had something of this magnitude before.
That's Public Safety Commissioner Walt Monaghan. He spoke with KHNS during a visit to Haines.
I'm an old guy. I've been an old cop for a long time. And there were surges in the 60s and 80s and 90s with different types of drugs, but they usually have flared out. This one is a long one.
This summer, commercial fishermen throughout the state received an unusual letter from Monaghan warning of the dangers of opioid abuse. The letter warns of the devastating effects of opioid abuse and the state laws against carrying drugs on the water.
It's not just about fishermen. It's about lumberjacks. It's about concrete pourers and everyone else out there. We're working with pharmacies. We're working with doctors. We're trying to get this thing, you know, as arms around as many people as we can. The more that we grab and have them join us in this effort, the more we're going to save.
Sam Cotton is the commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He explained why the state is conducting this kind of outreach to fishermen.
There's a lot of people that I've heard from, especially in smaller fishing communities, that have expressed concern about especially young people in their communities that are struggling with drug use in general and opioids in particular.
Though the letter was sent specifically to fishermen, the commissioners say it's part of a wider effort, and they're not singling out one industry.
What we were all trying to do is reach out as to as many different types of populations as we could to heighten the awareness of the situation that we have with opioids and other drugs.
Cotton says commercial fishing is already a dangerous job.
This year we've had deaths and a lot of injuries, and so any impairment, alcohol or other drugs, to also raise the danger level on a fishing boat.
Monaghan says the governor's disaster declaration has allowed for a greater focus on opioids.
He declared it a disaster, just like an earthquake or a forest fire. That way we can put more resources, we can get the word out to everyone else.
Monaghan and Cotton hope their outreach will help commercial fishermen avoid adding risks to an already dangerous job. In Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.